Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Chicago public school students are off for 2 weeks. When they return to class, the district may well have a new head honcho. Reminder, by the way, this program is live at 5:30, so if you're watching at 7, the story may have advanced beyond our discussion. Now, Mayor Brandon Johnson's handpicked Board of Education is meeting this evening, as I said, likely terminating CEO Pedro Martinez, and that is despite Johnson's public protestations. He hasn't been gunning for Martinez.
Is it still your wish to replace CPS CEO Pedro Martinez?
So what wish are you speaking of, though? What wish are you speaking of? Have I ever wished that before?
Our outlets have reported on steps your administration has taken to replace CPS CEO Pedro Martinez.
Such as? Which steps?
Asking him to resign.
So you heard me ask him to resign?
We've reported on it based on sources.
Martinez reportedly threatening to sue if he's fired. The Board of Education appears poised to settle his future just weeks before elected school board members take their seats. Some incoming members are urging the board to wait.
They elected us. They wanted independent voices. Give us an opportunity to get on the board, do our due diligence.
Meanwhile, the teachers' union wants a new contract wrapped in under the tree by Christmas. While there's tumult at CPS, Chicago did pass a city budget before the holidays hit.
This has been one of the most expansive budgetary processes in the history of Chicago.
We have to be honest negotiators here with the administration and amongst ourselves and meet each other at a place of true compromise. And this is where we are at with this budget.
The plan raises a host of fees in order to avoid a $300 million property tax increase. Critics say it's not enough.
But if you look how it's being paid for, it's just smoke and mirrors.
Also on holiday break, the jury in the corruption trial against former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Prosecutors rested their case. Madigan's defense team will get the next crack. Joining us on our Week in Review panel are Corley Jay from The Tribe, Becky Vivi from Chalk Beat Chicago, Hannah Meisel of Capital News Illinois, and Jake Sheridan of the Chicago Tribune. Now, Becky, I'm going to start with you because you are our resident education expert. And as we are talking at about 5:30 in the evening Friday, we've got a weird, like, into the holiday evening meeting of the Chicago Board of Education, and foremost on that agenda is the termination of Pedro Martinez. What is the latest?
So the latest actually is that Pedro Martinez's legal team has filed in court a request for a temporary restraining order and an injunction against the school board. A few hours earlier in the day today, his legal team did release a letter that they sent to board members, basically trying to kind of lay out that this would be an unlawful and improper termination.
And
then the reasonings for that. Well, that he, you know, prior to the, in there actually, there was a detail in the letter about his performance evaluation, which was, I guess, given to him on Monday of this week. That is in accordance with his contract. He always gets evaluated in December. It was a one-page evaluation that marked him as unsatisfactory. But his previous evaluation last year from the previous board was pretty glowing and pretty good. And so his legal team is really trying to lay out the reasons why this is an unlawful termination if they do decide tonight to vote on terminating his contract. Now, there's another item on the agenda. Settlement agreement. There have been all kinds of sort of possible scenarios floated that the board maybe could appoint a co-CEO while Martinez finishes out a contract in the next 6 months, take him till the end of the school year. It is very fast-moving.
Very fast-moving. Now, Jake, to what end is all of this? We know that, of course, this board is handpicked, appointed by Mayor Johnson, but when a new elected board comes in mid-January, he'll also have picked most of the board, or at least those who won election together will account for a majority that had backing from CTU, which is involved in all of this as well, of course. So why the rush?
Yeah, well, there are two major components of this, right? The mayor wants the CPS to take on high-interest loans to help close its budget, to help pay for its pension costs. And he also wants the board and CPS to reach a contract agreement with CTU. CTU is, you know, where he comes from. He was an organizer there. It was his most important base, both in people knocking on doors and in people giving him money to run a campaign. So they are paying close attention to what he does, and it's really important to them that the guy they backed comes through for them.
But again, he'll still have a majority of the board, so why does this have to happen right now, right away?
Well, you know, this is a conversation that is months coming, and it has been, I think, interesting to see, because I think although he will still have 11 of the 21 members who he has appointed, I will remind folks he appointed 7 members last year when he took office. They resigned en masse in October because they didn't want to carry out this directive to terminate Martinez's contract. One, you know, because Martinez would get a payout and it is costly to depart with him. They didn't think he was doing anything wrong and that there was anything for cause to fire him for. And I think that, you know, coming up in January, you do have people, voices on the school board, even though they may not constitute a majority, voices on the school board that certainly will, you know, oppose these moves. I think the other thing that I should note in the timeline here is that, you know, the CTU and CPS did enter a process of mediation or arbitration a few months ago with their negotiations, and that timeline was supposed to take us to some time in mid-January when a mediator would put out on the table, like, kind of, here's what we think a reasonable settlement would be. And maybe they're waiting because that report could not fall in the union's favor necessarily. Mm-hmm. That report might say, well, we think this is a reasonable settlement, and maybe the union wouldn't get, you know, the things that it's hoping to get. I should also maybe note, and this is something that folks maybe, it's not front and center, but the union will have their own internal election come spring. Stacey Davis Gates, one of the mayor's top allies, will be up within her union for her own re-election in May. So, you know, delivering a contract sooner than later is a good thing for her.
Particularly a contract that has hefty raises and a lot of the other asks in terms of education that members of the CTU have been asking.
Sure, and you know, the contract did expire last June. If you're a teacher in the school system, you know, this, again, the sooner the better. And I think there's just a desire to get the contract settled by a lot of parties, and including the people at CPS, I would say, and Martinez himself. But
so, Corley, what is your impression, as somebody who doesn't, you know, cover the board, but of course covers City Hall politics? Is this something that, as we've talked about, is going to help the mayor because it is what his base wants? Or is this harmful? Because I imagine a lot of people who aren't overly keyed into the Board of Education or who Pedro Martinez is know that name by now.
I think that a lot of his opponents will use this as fire against him. But again, you know, you see his base kind of like further dividing from Johnson. So it would be interesting to see what happens, especially if that termination happens tonight.
Jay, can you weigh in on that?
You know, I think this has been a long and drawn out fight, as Coralie was saying, you know, that has made the mayor look pretty bad in some ways. You know, I think people have heard a case over and over again from Pedro Martinez about why, you know, his own vision is fine, and, you know, taking on loans might be a financial risk for the schools. Mm-hmm. I think it really puts a lot of the mayor's decisions into question.
Does this feed into fodder that he is doing the bidding of the CTU? Hannah.
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, it's reasonable to think that at this point. You know, obviously he is very close, you know, that is where he comes from. But, you know, to Jake's point on the taking on more debt, Springfield has made it abundantly clear multiple times that the state is not going to be able to step in and fill any budget gaps for CPS. You know, the state is going to be facing its own kind of fiscal cliff in the spring. And so, you know, to have a plan that is, you know, not forward-facing, not long-term thinking, you know, that can only come back to bite you.
If they take out debt, where's the money going to come from to pay it? Becky?
Yeah, I think it's worth noting, too, that for many years, CPS did engage with a lot of borrowing and has a lot of debt on its books already. And I think there's a valid argument to be made that the district just is, they are facing a cliff that a lot of governments are facing as federal COVID relief dollars are running out. And they, you know, putting forward a short-term borrowing solution is not an entirely unreasonable concept when you are like, oh, wow, suddenly we're on this cliff, and rather than do something drastic, we would do something short-term. And like I said, the district used to do a lot of that short-term borrowing before in 2017 when the state approved a new funding formula to put all schools on sort of a ramp toward getting more funding. We're still on that ramp, and I think the mayor is arguing, well, listen, like, We should get more under that evidence-based formula, and we wish we could get it now, but we're not going to get it now, so why don't we take out short-term loan to get us to that point?
And the whole objective to continue education
and make
sure
the
neighborhood
schools.
And the state's not going to
speed that up, and I think there's, you know, from the philosophy of the mayor, and even certainly the CTU has argued, like, Chicago public schools have suffered from underfunding for many years. That said, I think Pedro Martinez and his administration, they were, you know, they have been very fiscally thoughtful, and I think they're trying to think also long term, because if you want great schools and you want those great schools to thrive, taking on short-term debt on top of all of this past debt is also not smart. Even if you did it in the past, doesn't mean you should keep doing it.
Well, the other thing that, you know, I hear, you know, in conversations with people in Springfield is, of course, they recognize the, you know, long-term underfunding of CPS, but they also see CPS's numbers continue to go down in terms of enrollment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they wonder, you know, should there be more restructure? Should we think more about, you know, actual restructuring? And yes, that does, of course, you know, bring into play school closures, and, you know, we have, you know, moratoriums on that. But
moratoriums and a lot of pain in certain communities pushing back on that notion.
I mean, we all
but others are saying
2013,
tough.
Very, very painful. But yes, other people are saying, you know, we really should look at, and maybe it doesn't have to be as painful, and maybe that's being a little Pollyanna-ish, but, you know, that's what I'm hearing.
I think also this is another, not to get too big picture, but I do think it speaks to something that this mayor still seems to be on a learning curve with, which is just how do you... It can't be all or nothing. It can't be so black and white. There has to be some sort of compromise. And to Hannah's point, yes, enrollment has been down. And yes, like, the district has benefited from this federal COVID relief money, but it kind of did, like, paper over a structural issue. And maybe there is a middle ground. And I think trying to find a path for the district to right its fiscal ship without being risky, is something that he should really be leading that conversation, and I don't see that happening.
So before we close the books on this, final question of is the legal action and what is going on, do we anticipate anybody here that is enough to give the board pause, or as this is evolving, we don't know what's going on, Martinez is gone regardless?
I will say this, I don't think tonight's meeting ends the ongoing drama. Mm. I think there will be more to come, and maybe we'll be at the beginning of the end of this, but I think there will be new chapters of this drama.
No way, no how is at the end of this drama. But we do have an end to other drama that had been playing out at City Hall, and that, of course, is this ongoing discussion of what was going to make up the 2025 city budget, and after four times, that was evidently the charm of, you know, different variations of proposals. Coralie, they got a budget passed.
Yes.
Is this a win for Mayor Johnson, and how?
I think that it depends on who you are. If you see it as a win, it was a lot of tension, months-long debate, you know, and it opened up a lot, maybe to some things that maybe a lot of people speculated with that divide between the Progressive Caucus and him. You know, we saw all the people like Maria Haddon come out and kind of scrutinize the mayor and say, you know, he was anything but Democratic in this process. But she voted yes. But then you have other artists like Andre Vasquez who voted no and also had that same kind of criticism of the mayor. So it passed very narrowly, 27-23. But I'm definitely glad that they got it out before Christmas, you know?
That's a relief to so many employees and others who depend on government services, mm-hmm, because this is unprecedented. But as you noted, just really alienating factions, including members of the Progressive Caucus that he is generally aligned with. Mm-hmm. Now, Johnson says that this final product is a result of his making changes based on alderperson's feedback. Critics, though, say this exercise ruined their trust in him.
If you intend to move this city forward, we better get on the right track with this trust thing. Because if you everybody start distrusting you, we got a problem.
So does he recognize that he needs to mend relationships? Can he, Jake?
You know, I'm not sure he recognizes that he needs to mend these relationships. He struck a really celebratory tone Monday after the vote. He definitely views this as a win. And he views, he continues to call himself the collaborator in chief. He continues to say, I had the most open process of any budget process ever in Chicago. A lot of alders don't feel that way, including the alders that he absolutely needs to do anything in the city council to get to 25 votes, the progressives. Even the ones that voted, a lot of them, as Corley pointed out, they put an asterisk on that. They said, well, I'm voting for this budget because it is almost the end of the month. We don't want to have a shutdown. So I'm not really sure the mayor is
hearing those votes. Suggestions, though. Gone is that. Actually, here, let's play another bite here. This is to Johnson's budget director, was actually in Chicago tonight earlier this week, and she said that the reason the mayor had predicated his spending plan on that wiped out in the final version $300 million property tax hike was because that is a stable future-looking revenue source.
So that in out years, we can depend upon revenues that are going to come in. And property taxes are the most stable for municipalities to put in place.
So, Jake, to that end, the property tax that he had originally put out there is not part of this in any capacity. How is that not a compromise?
No, that's a good point. There was definitely compromise that occurred here. I think a lot of aldermen feel that information on specific departments and spends wasn't shared with them quickly enough for them to make informed recommendations on what should happen. And, you know, there was a whole half of the council that was calling for cuts that didn't really materialize in the way that they hoped for. The mayor is opposed to them for you know, fine reasons, for because he deeply believes that government shouldn't be shrunk. He doesn't believe in austerity. And that was important for him to, continue to have the support of the labor community. And to continue to keep Chicagoans who, you know, they might not like paying for everything, but they might also not want to see their services cut, to keep those folks happy. So, there was some compromise, but I think also the process, the way things played out, the kind of suddenness of some of the changes and the lack of communication about them.
Obscurity, even, in terms of, as we heard earlier, that clip I find so striking, that exchange with a reporter where he was really seemingly denying publicly that he wanted Martinez out, despite reporting from the Tribune this week that leaked a memo making it very clear he, in fact, for months, has been trying to push out the CEO. Mm-hmm. Corley, is this just a structural issue with the budget overall, or is this emblematic of the way that Johnson leads?
I just think that it is an example of city council becoming more independent anyway. You know, we saw it a little bit with the pushback with Lightfoot, you know, less in Emanuel, less definitely with Daley. And I spoke to Alderwoman Jeanette Taylor, and she kind of talked about that. Like, she was saying how she was surprised that many people thought that the process was going so slow, when she was like, this is what democracy looks like. There should be pushback against the mayor. You know, it shouldn't just be yes, we agree to this. You know, they all have different needs and wants for the people in their wards, their constituents. So we're seeing more of that. And I think that as far as the property tax thing, I think that it is an example of kind of working and not just take it all or leave it. But also in that same vein, I think that some other people would oppose Johnson anyway, right? Mm-hmm. You see that they had a problem with property taxes, and then once they were gone, it was a problem with something else. And that was something that Alderwoman Jesse Fuentes pointed out as well. You have people that are on position with the mayor no matter what, just because of who he is. So he's going to always get that position because he's coming from that kind of, I believe, a progressive background, you know, as an organizer, and you have the opponents of that just don't like it.
And which is why it's so odd to me that he wouldn't spend a lot more time and energy than to solidify his allies. I mean, I think that is what is sort of so surprising about this budget process. If you know that you have people in the council who will oppose everything because you're just philosophically disaligned, then, you know, being able to work with your allies and not, it sounds like there's some maybe things happening behind closed doors where there's not, the trust is not built. You say you're going to do one thing and then you don't do another thing. I mean,
I don't know enough about that. I know, you know, the example at the top of the show and him saying he didn't ask Pedro Martinez to resign when now we have proof that he did. Like, that's a lie. And when you put that out and lie
it
to
hurts
people,
credibility.
People then think, okay, well, can I trust what you're saying?
Yeah,
and
it was
so
distrust
I think the distrust from, no, that's okay, but like from his allies is surprising. That's been surprising to me.
I definitely agree.
Well, and to that end, we have just a couple minutes left because I want to go to the Hannah show on the Madigan trial. But Jake, just in terms of the budget, he again did propose this property tax increase, breaking a huge campaign pledge. Yeah. But now there's a lot of nickel and dime fees. Is this going to, how does this resonate, you think, with Chicago residents?
Yeah, well, you know, when Chicagoans see subscription fees rise, businesses are going to see cloud computing taxes, parking is going to get a little more expensive, among a lot of things. It's going to be really interesting to see, but I think compared to a property tax, it's a lot more spread out. I think most Chicagoans are going to feel this less than homeowners would have felt a $300 million property tax.
At least recognize it less, perhaps, as well, because same amount of money coming in. All right.
Yeah.
Hannah, to you, because it was a big week in the long-going trial against longtime former House Speaker Michael Madigan, where the prosecution this week wrapped its case. What stood out to you? Did they make the case that Madigan's corrupt?
I mean, it's up to the 12 jurors who are ultimately on that panel in that room. But, you know, they mounted almost 9 weeks of testimony. In this case, they called 50 witnesses and, you know, two star witnesses to, you know, people who were secretly cooperating with the FBI, you know, tons of material, tons of tapes.
What's the most compelling?
I mean, I definitely think that the things that will stick with the jurors, because, again, it's just such a long trial. And we also have these two weeks of break. And I wonder what will stick with them. But I do think that the things that they saw on those tapes, the videotapes, some of the wiretap phone calls, those are the things that are going to stick with them, because it's, you know, actually physically, you know, biologically encoded into their brain differently than, you know, the Q&A that goes by so fast.
And of those, you know, let's go forward a minute, because now the prosecution has rested its case. Madigan's defense team gets to go next. Do we have any inclination as to what line they are going to argue before jurors?
Well, you know, they're arguing as they've argued all along, because they've, you know, been very effective in their cross-examination of all of these government witnesses. You know, they're arguing that this was just normal lobbying. It wasn't bribery, that things were, you know, done in the normal course. And just because, you know, Madigan had a certain way of talking, just because his co-defendant, Mike McLean, longtime State House lobbyist, had a certain way of talking, doesn't mean that they're, you know, corrupt, that there was no corrupt dealing and that there was no quid pro quo. Of course, the government, you know, has tried to make the case that these relationships constituted what's, you know, known as a stream of benefits theory, you know, especially when we're talking about the ComEd bills that got through Springfield in the years 2011 to 2019. And, you know, alleged that it was because of these jobs and contracts that ComEd gave to Madigan allies. You know, I also think that a lot of the things that when Alderman Danny Solis, former Alderman Danny Solis, FBI informant, was on the stand, a lot of those things when it came to Madigan's private property tax law firm, those are the things that are also going to stick with the jurors, because they heard so very much, they saw so much on those tapes, and, you know, they're going to have to decide whether, you know, it was a corrupt solicitation of, you know, these property tax businesses, these real estate developers that Alderman Solis introduced Madigan to.
Or just a business deal. We've got about 10 seconds left. So, Jake, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Hannah talked about former Alderman Danny Solis on the stand. Is this something you think members of the city council are watching?
You know, there have been a lot of corruption trials in Chicago, in Illinois.
Maybe they got bored after the Burke one, huh?
Yeah, you know, there'll be more someday. But I'm sure they're watching it, but, you know, whether lessons will be learned, we'll see.
And then in that holiday message, we are out of time. So our thanks to Corley J, Becky Vivi, Hannah Meisel, and Jake Sheridan. We will be back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Chicago Tonight, Week in Review, is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown, and the Mullenhauer Progressive Philanthropic Fund in honor of Ida Mullenhauer, supporting quality journalism. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by...
And that is our show for this Friday night, my last of the year. But be sure to join us next Friday. It's going to be a special year in review, looking at the biggest stories of 2024. And don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and the Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching, and happy holidays. And by the way, of course, you can check our websites as well as yours to find out what is going on at the CPS board meeting. Let's turn, however, to something else. I guess Illinois has additional people now, some 68,000 more, according to latest census figures, this after losing population. Why is that?
It's mostly international migration that's to thank. We are finally kind of losing fewer residents to other states, relative to before, but we're still second in out-migration to New York.
Second?
Yeah.
In the nation?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we saw that offset now by...
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.